Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and it's my pleasure to welcome to the program today Victoria Roberts. Hello, Victoria.
Hello, Vic. Thank you so much.
Victoria, you finally put out another book. I'm so glad.
So am I.
Why were you waiting so long? I know this one gestated for a while. You had this idea a long time ago, but you didn't really know how to make it work, did you?
I had the idea for about 25 years, but because it's about a family that lose their money and end up living in Central Park, I thought, well, there's nothing funny about homelessness. So it did take a while to figure out how to do it.
The book is After the Fall, and I know many of our listeners are familiar with you because I think a lot of our listeners read The New Yorker, and if they've read The New Yorker, they've seen your work. Tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do.
I've been working as a cartoonist for The New Yorker for 25 years, and people are probably familiar with the couple that I draw in the living room, where the woman usually has the line of dialogue. They're an oldish couple. I wouldn't say they're older. And I was born in New York City. It's a very New York couple, but I have a strange accent because I was brought up in Mexico City and Sydney, Australia, and I came back to New York when I was 29.
So that's probably an unmatchable accent then.
There's probably no complete mix.
Well, I've been enjoying your work in The New Yorker for many years, and do we call them cartoons? Do we call them comics? What do we call them?
I think cartoons. I guess I think of comics as the funnies, you know, in the Sunday paper. I call them cartoons.
Okay. And your book, After the Fall, is profusely illustrated with this wonderful family that has been forced out of their penthouse apartment, and the father's an inventor, and the mother, how would you describe her? She's a very New York type, isn't she?
Yes, although she has some Argentine firecracker in her as well. She's a bit of a socialite and quite elegant, and wearing her, she would be, although it's not mentioned in the book, wearing Emilio Pucci underwear under things.
Okay. And they have a son and a daughter and some pugs, and the pugs have been with you for quite a while, haven't they? Isn't there some spot in Central Park where people assemble with their pugs?
There is Pug Hill, and coincidentally, Pug Hill is kind of right in the vicinity of where the family live in Central Park, which is around the little boat pond, the curb near the Curbs Memorial Boathouse.
And the father, he's one of these guys that's kind of off in his head. He's a brilliant thinker. He's an inventor, but he's like really out to lunch, isn't he?
He's a bit goofy. He's a bit of a Mr. Magoo, I think. He's off, completely off in his own world. And I guess, you know, I very much like books that are about ideas, how people get their ideas, because it's always from something that you imagine the least. And he gets, like, one idea for one invention from Raquel Welch's performance in Fantastic Voyage. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Where they
film.
Shrink them, and then they go inside the body, and they're in the little craft shooting through people's veins. And
yes.
Yeah, right. I remember it.
And he, because of Raquel Welch, he thinks of a way of having this little mechanism that if it finds a blockage in any vein or artery, immediately whips out this buttress system, and so there's a stent right there.
Uh-huh. And he's done very well.
He has. He has, up to date. Mostly because of Smokos. He invents a cigarette that isn't a cigarette.
Uh-huh.
You know, that does not harm, but tastes just like a cigarette.
And of course, his wife can't be bothered with Smokos. She prefers her Gauloises.
Yes, yes. She thinks of the Emperor's new cigarettes, which is just a way of giving him a hard time.
The story is narrated by the son, and the son is Alan.
Yes.
And I'm wondering why you chose him as the narrator.
Alan is actually based on my brother Alan Benjamin, who is actually a labor organizer. And ever since he was a kid, he was very fair-minded and a very kind person and a great observer. And I thought he was the right person to observe this family without judgment, with a kind heart. And as you know, the other characters in the book are pretty self-involved. Sis is always doing a play or having a talk show or something like that. Pops is inventing. Mother's trying on shoes. So he had the right personality to be an observer.
Victoria Roberts joins us. Her new book is After the Fall. And I was looking at your website. I see the last book you did was Catitudes. I love your animals, the way you draw them. And in this new book, we've got some really great drawings of pugs. And I really like the squirrels in Central Park. They're wonderful.
Thank you. You know that there are, you know, some are like albino, and then there's some other dark ones.
Uh-huh.
They differ quite a bit as I started looking at them. Not that I really draw from nature. As you know, I've made up their ears are probably bigger than in real life.
Uh-huh. And the family is dislocated. Things go terribly wrong with their wealth and their finances, and they end up in Central Park. But through some miraculous thing, they get these wonderful catered meals brought to them. Obviously, they had a relationship with this chef at this French restaurant.
Yes, the Chateau Bohème. When I was a kid, was actually my stepfather, but Bob Benjamin, the father's modeled on, had a restaurant called the Chateau Bohème in Mexico City. And I always remember the chef there, Jean Conte. So he looks after the family. Initially, they don't have worries, but that doesn't go forever.
And this is a wonderfully absurd story, because here they are living in Central Park, but they don't seem particularly upset about it. I think our narrator is probably the most upset. But they operate and they function, and she keeps her cologne cool in the pond, and we have these household help that come and stay in the park with them because their brother has a very successful lawn mowing service, so they can afford to work without pay. The whole thing is just so whimsical.
Well, I think I had the idea of the park because it really leaves the family onto themselves. You know, when they don't have interference from outside, it's very much just the characters. And it was about the unity of family, really. No matter how badly people behave within the family, there's kind of tolerance for them and a bond. So no matter what happens, and it's also very much influenced by my mother, who's a character very like the mother in the story. And if that had happened, or if any circumstances, she always would make the most of it and keep going, you know. But what I was interested in mostly was the family and the relationship of the family. And I realized after I'd written the book that, in truth, I'd written the story of my family if they hadn't gotten divorced.
I see.
And I didn't realize that until much later.
So you were unconsciously channeling that.
A little bit, yeah, I think so. I think I very much loved all the people in the family and the notion of that family. Because families are kind of a bubble, you know, for good and bad, really. But it's very very hard to know what was really happening in a family unless you're in it.
True. The book is After the Fall. Victoria Roberts wrote it and illustrated it. She joins us on the program today from somewhere in Manhattan. Do you go into Central Park frequently?
Yes, I do, and it came from Actually, when I first came back, I had lived in Australia and had a fairly developed career, and I started over here. I was 29, and I would go to the park every day because it was within walking distance. And I got used to it, and that these characters just grew in place somehow. And I thought, I wondered what would happen if I didn't get work and all of that, because I'd come from a place with socialized medicine and all of that, which Australia was, you know, and still is, I think, to a place with much less of a safety net.
So how did you get a gig with The New Yorker? This has got to be the dream of so many cartoonists. How did you do it?
It was my dream, and I had started when I was 19. I had a friend, Bruce Petty, who's an Australian cartoonist, but he got an Academy Award. He worked for Punch. He worked for The New Yorker. And he said, just keep going. Show them that you have a world, a whole world of work. And I just submitted. I started when I was 19 and stopped. And when I came to New York, I submitted for about 2 years before I got in. But I had read that it took George Booth 10 years, so I was just determined to just keep doing it. But it was hard. It's hard to get the rejection slips. And I would often get the rejection slip and put all of my work in the garbage bin instead of taking it home. But one day I got a rejection slip with a little pencil marked note saying, please try us again, from Lee Lorenz, who was the cartoon editor. And I thought, well, I'm not going to give up now. And 6 months later, I sold my first cartoon.
Did you get excited when you saw that little note?
Oh, yeah. I thought, well, this means they're going to take my work. I can't give up. Because there's always the thought, you know, you'll give up. But the thing is, if you give up, well, then you can't get in at all. So
yeah.
You have to keep going.
Well, over the years, I have read The New Yorker, and I've interviewed a number of people who contributed to it over the years, and quite some time ago, I interviewed Brendan Gill, and he was talking about Charles Adams when he did cartoons for The New Yorker, and it's just such a legendary thing to be in that magazine and that continuity all those years, whether Tina Brown's the editor or whoever is running it, David Remnick, who I admire greatly. This is continuity, this wave, and I know that they've got an archive over there at your publisher with, what, probably 500 or more cartoons of yours in there?
Yes, I think over the years that's it's been 25 years. I've done probably more than they have there, but yeah. For me, The New Yorker was more than a magazine. It was kind of a world that I thought existed where there was sort of respect for your work somehow. I don't know. It was a magical place to me. I don't know if it was the type, the way the type was set, or the drawings or whatever, but it was because those artists were very much, there was nobody else like them. I mean, you might say a New Yorker cartoon means a certain thing, but really it means many things, many very original things done in different ways by different cartoonists.
And there's certain ones where you look at it and it just stays with you forever and ever and ever. It's imprinted in your mind.
Well, I think those are where you know, when cartoons are really a work of art, because they just keep on. If something touches truth, it just keeps on giving, you know? And that's when it really is something very, very special, like in the hands of Charles Adams, in the hands of Roz Chast kind of thing. It really becomes this magnificent, and where you can look at a cartoon and it does one thing, but it does another, and whoever is looking at it brings something else to it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful medium, too, because it works so quickly, so economically, but says so much.
Mm.
So it's really magnificent art, if you like. So
Victoria Roberts joins us. Her new novel is After the Fall, and she has a really wonderful website that I think our listeners would enjoy at victoriaroberts.net. And I'm wondering, Victoria, is Nona Appleby around? Does she do interviews? Could she talk to us at all?
Could I get on the phone? Could I? Hello? Is that Vic? Hello, Vic.
Is this Nona?
Yes, it's Nona Appleby. Thank you so much, darling. I wanted to get on, and she said, no, it's just for Victoria Roberts. And I was upset about it. I thank you for putting me on.
Well, Nona,
I just
had a feeling you were there, Nona. I had a feeling you were lurking somewhere.
Well, I was, and I just did some television this morning, but I think I got into trouble because I tried to take the host's job. I said, are you leaving soon? Because I'm looking for a platform. And I won't do the same to you, Vic. I won't ask you if you're leaving and then need a replacement. Because I've got my eye out. I'm putting the word out. I'm looking for a show to do. On radio, television, on Twitter, on anything, really.
Nona, I think that you could do it. I really believe that.
Thank you very much. I've done a stage show, and I did a Sondheim show singing. I did like a cabaret thing, but I'd rather do theatre, actually. And I'm working on a show about corn. Not porn, corn.
Corn?
Yes, all of the aspects of corn, including its shrinking germ. It's very scientific, but I work with an outsider scientist on it. He's also slash outsider economist. Corn is the key to everything, really, right now.
I think you might be right. Of course, I'm from Iowa, so I'm a little biased.
You might be, just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
But, you know, I've been in Mexico a lot. We've got the different variety there.
Hmm.
So it's an exciting ride. It's a roller coaster, really, the corn show.
How old are you now, Nona? Am I allowed to ask you that?
I think that's not really that you're not really a gentleman, but I will say 86. And I hope you'll bleep that out.
When
you edit this.
We're going to bleep it, or maybe we'll just change it to a younger age.
No, I'm proud of my age. I'm not worried by it. But people, you know, it was never considered, because in those days, of course, Betty Davis was old when she was 40. It's very different now. But it's supposed to be rude to ask a person their age. Don't ask me. It's in the books, the etiquette books.
I'm so sorry, Nona.
But that's all right. You're probably reading better books than that.
Well, I'm really glad that Victoria allowed you to pick up the phone, because I just had a feeling. I know that the two of you spend a little bit of time together, and I just had a sense that maybe you were in the vicinity.
I can't get away from her, but I'll put her back on again if you like.
Okay.
Reluctantly, but thank you so much, Vic.
Thanks, Nona.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Hello.
Oh, Victoria.
I didn't be able to get her off the phone.
She's
like, really?
Thank you.
She's wonderful.
I love her.
She's my oldest character, and she's really... She's smarter than I am, Vic. This is a bit scary. But, it's funny because she's... I don't really put her on the page, but she's good in the shows. And she taps, you know, in case they ask. Yes, she does tap.
And if our listeners go to your website, you have a YouTube channel, don't you?
I have a few of her videos on. Yeah, I do. And I'm about to do more, I think, because people are clamoring for her, and she's got somebody made a Facebook page for her and everything. She's a natural. I think maybe she touches a chord because everybody knows somebody like that. But she does shows in which there's always a different version of, you know, there's, there was one about Mexico, and her friend Frank is an outsider archaeologist and so on. So there's always this upside-down view of whatever she's talking about.
And she came to you when you were a teenager?
Yeah, because I lived in Australia, and when I was at art school on weekends, I worked as a geriatric nurse. And the accent and the voice of the Australians who'd been through the depression of these older people who were in their 80s and 90s when I was 16 was quite different to the modern accent, believe it or not. So Nona has has that. And I also lived in a basement in a Victorian terrace, those houses they have in London, which they also have in Australia. And my landlady was Ethel O'Brien, and she was an older Australian. So I think I got a lot of wisdom from those people, and I also got the accent. She's very well formed somehow, Nona.
Mm-hmm.
Where I could put the other characters from the cartoons in a book, I can actually put Nona in a show. It's a kind of 3D thing with her.
She's fleshed out.
Yeah, she is, and not by any work of mine. It's just she's arrived. Just like the book very much was there. I always describe the work as more of an archaeological dig than a creative venture. I always feel I'm always looking for something rather than creating something.
And they find their own time to exist.
Yeah, Nona went away for a long time when I first came back to the United States, and then suddenly emerged and in theater. And, and once I did a character for an Australian magazine that was the equivalent of a Cosmopolitan that was created for them. It was never the same. It never became the sort of live character that the ones that arrive of their own volition are.
I see.
Although the animals are always very, very much alive, the animals that you like, they always have been. But it's really a gift. I don't mean in the sense that I have a gift, but it's a real present to me that I have this, that I can work with them. I feel very privileged.
It's
really luxury.
I'm so glad that Nona was available today.
She's delighted because she didn't think she was going to get on the phone.
Well, we wanted to surprise her. And if any of our listeners want to check out some of the Nona Appleby videos, just go to Victoria's website at victoriaroberts.net, and those are archived there. You can also check out her YouTube channel. And her new novel, After the Fall, it's not really a Christmas novel, but we do get kind of a little Christmassy vibe at the end, and it is December, so a lot of folks are looking for Christmassy stuff, and there is a little Christmassy flourish there. And I have to think that you really enjoy illustrating books because you've illustrated a lot of them.
I've done a few, but I actually really, really like working for grown-ups, like above picture book age, so older kids, I think.
Because, like me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just like you.
Okay. Well, I think if the inner child is still functioning at a high level, that's a good thing.
Well, I guess, you know, some of us never grow up. Just stay the same.
I feel like my inner 13-year-old is pretty much calling the shots.
Do you think it's 13? You know, they say that people stop at different ages. Like, say, some are stuck at 5 or, you know, depending on what. I don't know if you pick the best part of your life in the past or how it works.
How old are you then? What was
I'm 55.
No, I mean the inner...
In the age?
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because I always, when I was a kid, I always felt that 56 was like my real age.
Really?
Always.
Really?
And so I feel like I'm coming into my sort of real peak age and will stay 56. Forever, you know, like what was 56 at 14?
Okay.
So
you're finally getting there.
I'm finally getting to the age that I always felt.
I see.
Yeah, I was the most realized in, if you like.
Victoria Roberts has joined us today. Her new novel is After the Fall, and we've gone far afield. We even brought Nona Appleby onto the program, and just for a brief cameo there. And when you get a cover on the New Yorker, how does that work?
Well, it used to work in a different way. Now there's an art director who is Françoise Mouly, who's married to Art Spiegelman. And who also publishes and edits books and such. And you take in an idea, and usually they show it to David Remnick, and they come to a decision. They might have changes. In the old days, being under Bob Gottlieb, and when before they had an art director for covers, it was just Lee Lorenz, who was the cartoon editor, and you would bring in a finished cover, and they either bought it or didn't buy it. They didn't really do a lot of changes and things so much in those days. But it's a very different world now, I think, for magazines.
They seem much more topical now and much more quick. Like, we just had the election, and the next week suddenly there's one that obviously has been done in the last week.
Yes, and there are all those wonderful ones that Barry Blitt has done over the years, you know, the political ones. I think first there's much more interest from David Remnick in politics, so that the magazine is focused on that. And currency, you know, it's...
Sure.
On the other hand, with the Internet, again, that changes because it's a weekly means a certain thing, so it's a very different time, and an interesting time, I think, for publishing, if you want to call it publishing, with the Internet. It's sort of unsettling because, you know, you have to be so quick or not do that at all. So the covers in the old days, I think, used to consciously try to have just like a sense of wonder and take people away almost from what was happening in the world.
I agree.
Although I think they did address the world wars and such, or World War II, that is. So.
Well, Victoria, it's really been a pleasure having you on the program.
It's been a pleasure, Vic. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
The book is After the Fall. It's the new one from Victoria Roberts. She's been my guest today in the Book Nook. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McKeonis. Thanks for listening. Tune in next week when we track down Peter James. The last time he was on the program, he told us he's going to be working on a crime novel inspired by his former occupation working in the movie industry. And in this one, can a chandelier be a murder weapon? Peter James returns to the program. His new novel is Not Dead Yet, set in Brighton, England, right here in the Book Nook. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.